Hi, everybody. This is a long time coming. So I'm super excited to finally, after I would say more than a year talking about coming to the podcast, going and coming and meeting in person twice already. And finally, I have the super amazing Jan, also known as Obi Jan or something like that, that he will tell me about in a few seconds. So if you guys like this content, if you have been following the work, if you think this is worth it, let me know by, you know, a thumbs up or subscribing or whatever you prefer to do, some feedback, a private message, anything will do as long as you let me know that you're interested in what is happening here. So thank you so much, Jan. This is insane. We have been talking and talking about this, about that, and then finally this is the day, a Friday at
On a
lunchtime.
lovely
Why
Friday.
not?
Excellent.
Thank you so
Thanks a
much
lot,
for
Rita,
this.
for having me
Yes.
here on your show.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now that Jan is famous for many, many reasons in the industry, and now even another new reason because he's also now a very successful YouTuber. So we'll talk about that too. But the truth is that we met already twice, once in the Women in Localization, that was our first time. Opening show, so the opening event, and then I finally went to a Lisbon Cascais Expo, whatever you want to call it, lock lunch, where Jan was present. So when we went to the Web Summit, so that was perfect. But Jan and I have a lot of things in common. We know we have lots to talk about, and it always feels like we don't have enough time because every time we meet, there's lots of people around us. So I thought, okay, let's make it all together. Let's make it happen in that way, right? In the podcast way, so that we can do all at once. So basically, we have never spoken deeply about ourselves or about our careers or anything like that. So we're going to take this opportunity. If you guys have been following Jan, if you haven't, this is an opportunity to get to know the man behind the legend, right?
That sounds so much. Don't put the barrier so high.
Yes, it's true. So it's very important. So let's start with, like I say, I told you I was going to ask you about this. So he was just asking me, so what's the story? And I said, plan is to talk about you. And I like starting with when we were kids, because some of us have had this language dream forever, and others never thought about it until we were already in our working years. So what was your situation? I know now that you're German. I thought you were Belgian or Dutch.
German,
This
German.
was my guess. And then when I came in with a German friend, I realized, oh, he's actually German. So that was news for me. So you're
That's
German.
it.
So what was it like to grow up as Jan? Was it like a multilingual family? Was it just a monolingual family? You had anything to do with languages? You were dreaming about languages, or what's the story?
Yeah, so thanks a lot for having me here, for opening this discussion. Definitely, this was overdue. And yeah, I'm honored to be here with you on the show. So
Thank you so much.
how did I start it? Well, my background. So I'm German, German, German. So there's no
Like in Portuguese, 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 right?
multilingual background in my family. My dad was come from the northern, very northern part of Germany. My mother from Hamburg. And so I was raised in Hamburg, in a suburb of Hamburg. Like normal kids, no skateboarding. I was not into computers. My brother was. I'm not. I was outside. I was sailing. You know, a very sportive guy. Played hockey and yeah, skateboarding was big for me. Quite normal, but Hamburg is a city that is it's supposed to be the door to the world.
Okay.
That's their claim, you know, that's a door to the world. And so Hamburg is a very international city. There is a lot of trade happening there. We have the harbor in Hamburg. So, you know, my father is so my family is all entrepreneurs. So my father started a company on his own. Then my mother is from a bakery family, a very well-known bakery family in Hamburg, and she was there for a time. But then, you know, kids came to life, and so she decided to be a full-time mother as well, which was super great. So
I know how it is. I had a full-time mother too, so I know how it goes.
You know, that's and it was so a very nice childhood. And you know, being in Hamburg in this multinational, well, in this trade city, after school, so I started off with English, like in typical, what is it, high school, like gymnasium, you know, that you start with English. And then I tried French. French was a, I don't want to say a disaster, but it wasn't such a great fit always with the professor, with the teachers and so on. But then I started taking Spanish classes as well. And well, at some point I was struggling with school. We had to decide the right angle for the final courses, your Abitur in Germany. You have to choose your heavy, heavy, like your focus areas.
Yeah, like us. Mm-hmm.
And I sort of had I liked German. I had German and geography, but German at my school was cool, but German at another school was completely different matter, and it was a complete disaster. And so I repeated one time. And at that point, I was about to throw everything away, you know, and say, hey, why school? Why Abi? Why should I make the bachelorate in this school and so on? So my family decided, you know, Jan, calm down, calm down. We have a good friend in Argentina, you know, in Argentina, they are about to have a wedding. Go there, you know, just step out. You repeat half
for
a year off, you know, take a time off and then experience, you know, something else, center yourself, whatever, reflect. And so they organized a 1 month trip to Argentina when I was 16, 17 almost. And that was my first real contact to Spanish and the Spanish culture, Spanish speaking culture, Argentina. I was in La Plata, which is very close to Buenos Aires. And that was really exciting. I mean, it was amazing. I was, you know, a young boy and traveling around in Argentina. I had my headquarters there, but then I, you know, discovered the country on my own. I drove to Iguazu waterfalls.
Wow.
Which was, like 26 hours bus drive. That was amazing. You know, I mean, long way, but these was like experiences. And afterwards I got 2 months training, language training in Madrid.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So you were invested in this Spanish learning situation.
Yeah, I Spanish was sort of cool. And then, things wrapped up. There was a feeling with the Spanish culture and the Spanish language. And after the 2 months in Madrid, which were just insanely nice, lived in the city center, you know, on my own and party all the time. And Madrid was and is still like a magic city that I really enjoyed. So,
very nice.
That was language starting deeply, then English.
They always get you, right? Languages always get you.
Exactly. So, and from this point on, I did a apprenticeship in a trade company Dole Fresh Fruits, the banana company, you know, nothing to do but it was a trade training, you know, 2.5 years practice and work experience, this German model.
So you were acquainted with businesses basically from your family background and then with your banana background.
Absolutely. And then I met my wife. She is a Spaniard, you know, my
And
future
she
wife.
was selling bananas too. No.
She was at the same company. She was organizing that the bananas came
Oh, I
to
see.
Europe. She were organizing all the ships. And yeah, we fell in love. And then, you know, but she wanted to go back to Spain, and she was from Madrid. And
So
that
this is
was.
why you lived in Madrid for a long time, right? Because you told me last time and I was a bit like, I had no idea where it came from, right?
That's it. That's it.
Okay, so
Love.
Madrid was your headquarters for, let's say, 20 years, you told me, I think, in the Lachlan event,
Exactly.
right?
So she made me
So
come to Madrid.
what took you from the bananas to then somehow the language business?
Yeah.
What happened there?
So that was a trainee program in that company. But I thought, you know, I needed some. That was okay, but I was, you know, trying to achieve a little bit more. So university was still something. I said, yeah, I want to go to business administration and do some formal university career. And so I decided to go back to university, but I was in love with this girl from Spain. So, you know, and a good German needs to have some structure and some plan B or whatever.
That's what they say.
So there were exactly two courses in Germany, or like programs, university programs that dealt with Madrid, with Spain
Oh,
International.
so you were interested in that specifically, right?
Yeah, I, you know,
That
very
was your
reduced
focus.
scope, exactly. So I had to find something with Germany and Madrid, and there were two programs. I applied to both like in a combination double diploma university careers, and one worked out, and that was it. 2 4 years university between Germany and Spain, and now this is where my professional career in this industry started as well, because then I started at a company from my brother, and building up the localization stuff. That was a
I
LinkedIn
see.
competitor.
So you actually started taking care of the language affairs of your brother's company.
That's it. And it was a software company. You know, that was 2000. We're talking about 2000, the time from 2001 to 2005. This was
So you
my.
actually learned in practice,
Oh,
right?
yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, thrown in
You
because.
started from the client side, let's say that, something like that.
Totally, totally, totally. Yeah. Because, you know, I was at that time, I was in Spain. I had to do some practice training, you know, during this university career. You have to do some trainings, you know, half a year trainings. So, and I did it in the company of my brother because that was so cool. You know, that was a LinkedIn competitor. At LinkedIn was founded in 2003, in summer 2003. My brother started the company in October 2003. So, and he was clear about, you know, social networking, what we are doing here nowadays, you know, multimillion. So that was the very beginning of that.
Oh, I love
And
it.
this company exploded. You know, it was just the very beginning of online on, you know, we had the dot-com bubble. That was internet 1.0, dot-com bubble. And then LinkedIn started, social networks, MySpace, and these guys
Yes.
were
Two
around,
thousand
you know.
four, 2005, something like that, right? That's the
Exactly.
idea that I have. So
And
when I
just
got
imagine.
to the States in 2006, everybody had a MySpace, but it was basically for, as far as I remember, recording artists, musicians, and then this high five, all sorts of things. But I have the impression that LinkedIn really took over around 2007. That's when I have the impression that,
And that
it was
was
like
just in the
PayPal,
US.
LinkedIn, of course, in the US, of course.
Oh, so, you know, in Europe, they weren't really active till 2010, 2010, 2011. This is when internationalization kicked off at LinkedIn, because all the time before, the management team said, you know, why? We have you know, the biggest market in the world, the brightest people. So there's no need to go international. So, and this was also why Sing, my brother's company, was, you know, rolling out market after market. And wow. we tried to cover the whole European space. Mm-hmm. And so internationalization was a part. And he said, you know, you're in Spain. Okay, so find a translation agency, you know, do and make it happen. We need to translate.
So you basically were the manager of the whole localization department. Let's call it that, at least the more linguistic part of it.
Yeah, so my initial job was to find this LSP, you know, who uh-huh. who works with us. And so that sort of was a crash between cultures because the translation industry was, you know, not up to the challenge to have open, constant communication with translators, project managers, developers, that they can interact on a SaaS service now called TMS, right? That
right.
wasn't available at that time.
Mm-hmm.
There was the world server around. That was the only big deal out there.
Yeah.
And all the other solutions out there were technical solutions that were mainly offline tools, licensed yeah. offline tools. Trados
sure.
everywhere, right? You know, Trados
yes.
was a different story. And so the mentality of LSPs was a different story as well. So it was super hard. We decided after 3 months to insource it again and mm-hmm. work directly with translators because there was
wow.
no, you know, not a, it was not smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And we took too much. So we insourced and worked directly with them. We built a homegrown TMS. In-house.
So this is like you were foreseeing the future because we're now seeing a lot of that. That's how people now work directly
that
with clients because they have developed.
Story, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So great. So you were already creating your, well, one client only or dedicated department for translation and localization. And so when did you parted ways, if you have, with your brother, at least in that format, right?
That was 2006, 2 years after we started, because we, at that point, language operations were already like 15 languages mm-hmm. at that moment.
Wow.
And, you know, it's quite a lot of people involved.
I know.
And we were in Spain and the headquarters of Sing was in Germany. And, you know, we were like sort of very distant. And most of the decisions were, I mean, all the decisions were taken in the local office in the headquarters in Hamburg. And we felt, you know, this is awkward, first of all, because we are not really, you know, we were too far away to be taken into account. Mm-hmm. And language management at that scale is nothing you want really to have as an in-house department,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, this is sort of a small operation in comparison to many others.
Yes, for
but
sure.
If you are in a startup situation, there were new people coming, joining the team every single week. You know, that was gross. And nobody knew each other. And, you know, we mm-hmm. were suddenly those veterans in the company. Everybody knew us because we touched everybody, but between them, they didn't mm-hmm. know each other. And sometimes it was like just chaos, you know? And so yeah, and my brother and me, you know, we are strong personalities, both of us. And it was good.
I believe you.
Let's go separate ways. So, and that's 2006 where we come.
So was your brother your first client or not really? Yeah. Not really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. What about the Beluga name? Because it's like, whoa, everybody goes, I know that it's quite interesting to actually take a word from another realm of the world and make it into a company name, right? That yeah. is completely unrelated. Everybody knows the Apple example. I guess it's the iconic way to go. But I'm not a person like that, right? So in my mind, if it's related to languages, it needs to have the word language because I'm probably too basic, right? But you somehow had the capacity to associate these two things that most people would not associate. So why Beluga?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you need a company name. Full stop.
Okay.
Let's start with that. All right. This is a requirement to get started. And at that point, we were in Valencia. There's the oceanographic of Valencia. There are two beluga whales. My wife is a big fan of nature, birds, and animals, and so on. So, and she fell in love with the beluga whales. We visited them and said, "That's nice, And why don't we call our enterprise Beluga, right?" And I was like, "Why not? Why not?" Because, and then you dive into it. So the beluga whale is a basic, but it is. There's a story behind the whale. Do you know the whale?
No, I don't.
Okay,
I mean,
so.
visually, I can imagine it, but I don't know anything about it.
It's a white whale, right? And it
Bit
is
softer looking, right? Something like that looks very sweet somehow.
absolutely so sweet. It's a sympathetic animal, okay? So normally they are like in the Arctics, in the cold areas, and they are in groups of 500 plus animals. So it's a herd animal. It's not like a single whale and two animals or something. They are in a group. So, okay, so what we are doing here, it's, and then, a beluga whale, the beluga whales have one of the most sophisticated communication systems in the animal reign,
Kingdom.
kingdom, exactly.
Right.
So, oh wow, they are masters of communication. So, nice. That adds up. And then they do lovely bubbles. They can do bubbles. They are very playful, and they can rock up
The
and
little sounds are very cute.
so there was a lot of things we saw in the beluga animal that actually felt very, very good for for what was our purpose. We wanted to bring people together. We wanted to communicate. We want to be agile. Oh, and the one feature I have forgotten to say is it's the only whale that can turn their neck. So because they have a flexible vertebra.
Wow. So they
Now
can look at other places where other whales
they
will not
can
be able to.
look around the corner, right?
Wow.
And so, and that makes it very unique. And then you have the Beluga Caviar brand, which is like the best beluga out there. Then you have the vodka brand, which is also
I
the
didn't
best.
know.
Yeah, so there's a lot of
There's a lot for
positive
me to
associations.
investigate in terms of belugas. Let's see now.
So
Oh,
you asked me
wow.
for the background story of that,
Yes,
so
that's always something that, I love hearing from people what they were thinking. Well, except if you chose like the initials of your name or something like that, because that's pretty self-explanatory. But usually, if you have a name that it's a bit, out there, or even if it's very common, but you still went for it when you knew that everybody was going to call it fried chicken, blah, blah, blah. So why did you do it? There's a story behind it, right? So people have their reasons for their choices. And I love that because that's what makes everything so unique. And this is really the purpose of the language worker, like I was telling you, is to get to know the person and the motivations and the inspirations and all of that. And I think that we don't have enough opportunities of getting to know the real thing that operated within their
backstory.
minds exactly. So that is lovely. I'm like, oh my God, that's insane. But talking about communication and looking around and all kinds of things like that, I think you became much more famous than before. You probably were already a respected company owner, all of that. But all of a sudden, you had this inspiration, this Lachlan story, right? I'm also a Lachlan ambassador. And this month, we have a Lachlan. So it's on the 31st. So the last day of the month, we're doing our first 2025 Lachlan. So, yes, so I did
Wonderful.
it.
Great. Yeah,
So what's
so
the story behind that? Because it's such a major thing. It became, something that really connects people. A lot of people will tell, well, if you see the episode that we have with Women in Localization Portugal, they will tell me, and I had no idea, that they all met in long lunches, right? So this
That's
like
it.
becomes a common theme for people and a common subject. So I thought, well, we really have to make this happen because people keep talking about this. Yesterday, I had a conversation also with another for the podcast with another Lock Lunch ambassador, right? So can you imagine? Like, I don't know how many Lock Lunch ambassadors I've had on the podcast. So I guess it was more than time for us to actually see the man who's responsible for bringing all these people together. So let's hear it.
It's I'm myself amazed, okay, because this is a grassroots organization, so there's nothing behind, there's nothing behind but the network itself. So we talked about Sing, this networking company. My brother founded. We were engaged till 2010, 2011, more or less, with the company. This was also when my brother sold the company. There was a restructuring into going, LinkedIn was taking over the
Established.
place. And now this is just insane, the comparison. But so German-speaking markets was the main focus. So that was no more internationalization really needed. But, the networking is a science, and the basic science behind social networking is structured in a couple of epic, on of it has to do with scalability, it has to be with social dynamics, it has to be the 60 degrees of connection theorem. These are all concepts in the networking space. But most of people just don't care about,
Or you
and
have no idea that it works like that. I would say, like,
exactly.
I don't.
But so the theorem of 6 degrees of separation means that you, through 6 degrees, will know everybody in on the world. You are connected with Arnold Schwarzenegger or Donald Trump through 6 degrees in the maximum of cases. So there's not 7 degrees, it's 6 degrees. So you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, So the power of networking, if you have studied a little bit like this, and this was also my thesis in the university, social
Oh,
networks and dynamics. And so,
so you're a real
I'm a social.
expert. It's
Yeah,
different.
it's not just there's a science behind, and behavioral studies. Like now, when we go to LinkedIn and see a notification, the hook, there's a whole bunch of scientists behind that study our behavior. And social
Makes
networking is
sense.
nothing else. So now,
Of course.
I was in Hamburg and in 2019 for 1 year with the whole family. Okay, we packed our stuff from Madrid. We rebuilt our house in Madrid and had to find a place, and my brother said, "Hey, Jan, I have a place. Come here, spend a year." And we thought, "Oh, great! Let's do it." And I discovered that I was not connected at all with the language industry in Hamburg, other than my two translators I knew there and the team of Phrase. Because they were in Gänsemarkt, very close. And so one day I ask Phrase founders, why should we meet for lunch? And I want to know people, and maybe we can invite somebody else from the space. Why not? Come on. Because Phrase and all the TMS stuff, if you as I have told you, we have been very much involved with that. Phrase has taken over the translation tool we developed at Sing at that time. So, they started, then they had a solution. The Sing didn't want it to continue investing in their own solution, and then they merged the solution and Phrase were created, and then rolling, and the rest is history of Phrase, right?
Cool.
So, there was a connection to Phrase, and We got together five people or four people, one translator, Ruth Frombin, the Phrase founder, and another LSP owner of a big LSP from Hamburg. And we sat there. That was like, oh wow, this is so cool. Cool atmosphere. This is localization industry. Oh, this is a lunch. This is a localization industry. Lock lunch. Oh, cool.
Wow.
That was, and then it, and I was on LinkedIn already at that moment, very, very active, through all my background. And, I posted about it and I put all my energy in there, all the good vibes of that. And that response I received on that post was just amazing because, the whole network was responding. And hey, when do you come to Amsterdam? When do you come to Barcelona? Yuka from Barcelona. Hey, come here, do the same here, right? And I said, yeah, nice. But I can't do lock
Everything
lunch in
myself, of
while
course.
living. That's nothing I can make money off, and I don't want to make money off. But that was a great thing. So why don't you do it yourself? And this is how Lock Lunch started.
Wow, I love it. So the first lock lunch ever, the unofficial first lock lunch, was in Hamburg, and then what happened when it became official? So you were the first ambassador, or you already had someone else being the first ambassador?
Yeah, the next step was the next week I had a meeting in Berlin. And on my YouTube channel the other day, I had the ambassadors from Berlin on the show, and we recalled that it's already 5 years ago. And so, Michele was one of them, or what was the person we had there, 10 people on the table. And I said to him, Michele, you have to run this here in Berlin. I have to go back to Hamburg, but you have to do it here. This is just great, and he was like, yeah, let's see, no? And he stuck with it 5 years now. And you have to listen to him telling the stories about, what they have achieved, how impactful Lock Lunch has been for him and for the whole community in Berlin, getting together. It's just amazing. But it started there. So it was Berlin, and then Yuka started and saying, yeah, okay, cool. We do it in Berlin, in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
And it was, they in 3 weeks or something, she said, yeah, but what do I have to do? And I said, nothing. Just put it out there, call out that you are meeting there and that people come in. And it was a huge success. And then it was one place after another. Huge growth.
Okay, so I didn't tell anyone that we were going to talk today. Well, except for friends of mine who are tired of knowing about Lock Lunch, and they are ambassadors themselves, right? So two or three people that we know in common. I said, "Yes, it's finally coming," and I was excited because actually, I guess this month, a lot of the ambassadors are in Portugal are actually coming here for some reason. I'm very surprised. And just yesterday, I was talking to Mafalda, ambassador from Porto, and apparently she's coming. And I mean, I was very excited about all that. And then, believe it or not, it's not like I put it on the internet or anything, obviously, because it hadn't happened yet and didn't make any sense. But the truth is that I actually got a message from one of my friends, a young girl. She's super interesting creature. And she was asking me, "Oh, by the way, I've been wanting to ask you something. How do I become a Lock Lunch ambassador?" So this is how it's going, right? I guess we start asking each other how we can make it happen because people are more and more interested. I guess the more we do it, the more people want to do it, right?
Yeah. Everybody wants to be connected. So let's start from that one. And we have the online connection and we have the offline connection. The offline connection is in our industry, traditionally conferences. And that was one of the reasons why I said, this sucks, because
You're
I
just
went
quiet
to,
and listening.
I went to, in this year, 2019, I traveled to, or it was 2018, like fall 2018, to Santa Clara, to Lock World, and that was a great conference with Ulrich and all the folks and meeting it. But I had conversations with people from Spain, and I really, I loved that discussion. It was like, that is strange. We are traveling around the world to have a conversation with like-minded people on the other side of the world, spending tons of money because, you know, flight and hotel and all this stuff.
I know where Santa Clara is. I've lived very close to it.
You know, that is not sustainable. That's not, you can do it once. And who can do it? Well, five privileged people in our industry.
Of course.
We have a huge industry.
Mm-hmm.
So
you created those microcosmos, right? Where people can actually, and the thing is that it will have consequences in everything else that you do, because you create this sense of community where before there was no possibility of doing it. And somehow you created that now became thing that we do and everybody loves doing it. And it actually brings us together in ways that we didn't expect. And I guess that now when we want people to collaborate in our own projects, this is probably the first place where we go to, because we have seen them in person the vast majority of times. Even if I have been present in other lock lunches, there were every now and then online. And I have to say that one of my favorite ones, I'll say this, I talk about her a lot. She's just an amazing person. So I met Ida Susana from Indonesia while I was still a project manager, and she was one of my preferred translators back then, right? But then it's somehow she's such an amazing person, and her lock lunches online, I mean, they're insane. And this is how I met the other ambassador I talked to yesterday, right, from India. So this is how it goes. It's just insane. So I do think that the fact that you can do it online and offline, it's just just the best of both worlds, because sometimes you need that, because how else would you know? Actually, the ambassador from India just sent me a message saying, oh, I'm now thinking about going to Portugal. Oh my God,
rock travel. And exactly. So, you know, what you're describing is, you know, building bridges and, you know, and building trust. So the problem of the conferences, which I feel is, you know, it is great to have conferences, but we don't have the frequency and we don't have the money and time to attend them.
So the effort is a great effort all around to actually make it happen.
Exactly. You know, you leave your home and you leave your wife, your everything behind. Hey, I'm going, you know, 1 week away, and wow, this is negotiation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, why don't we create something locally to connect the people? Because locally, you might want to just have a discussion with another LSP owner, you know, in Madrid or in wherever. Then you can travel around and say, can I meet people where I'm now just from my industry, you know, where I don't have to explain again that translation is not only machine translation, right?
Right.
It is still, there are still humans in our industry, you know, and all this stuff. You can go to a different level, and you have the frequency once a month where you can observe people, how they are, and, you know, and base your judgment on it. And you mentioned it, you know, all the women in localization team from Portugal met at a lock lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So why they decided to become women in localization as a team? Because they knew each other.
Exactly.
They had a chance to get, you know, a feeling for each other and understand and see that they are community driven, that they are, you know, involved. So, and this is a completely different level of trust, what we are building up here, that enables all the rest.
I agree. This is exactly what happens. I have no idea sometimes when I start talking to people that they're actual lock lunch ambassadors. And in the end, they say, oh, yeah, I'm a ambassador too. I'm like, oh my God, this is insane. So it's actually more frequent than one could imagine. So this is actually huge. And the fact that, like you said, you can go somewhere and go like, oh, let's go for lunch, but, you know, I'm kind of new in town, or I don't know anyone, or I'm just here for a week or whatever. And you know that this is happening, and it's just unbelievable, because somehow you are already, without being connected, you're already connected, because you have such a huge thing in common that it's actually very simple, but it works like a charm, right? So it's been amazing for me. So that's what I have to say.
You know,
and I know that people feel the same way.
The people who are ambassadors who became ambassadors. It's very simple. You know, you are in a place where no best ambassador is. You
Exactly.
apply through an online form, which is a Google spreadsheet. You know, it's a Google form, and just get it started. Log Lunch is not complicated. It's easy. It must be as easy as possible because we all have a different life, right? So we have a professional life. We must attend them and so on. So I don't want anybody to, you know, invest to create an event. It's not an event. You know, it's not with presentations. It's nothing. You don't have to get money in your hand to make a reservation for the places. You just try to find a place that is as open as possible so you can fit in as many people as you expect to come, right? So nobody stays outside. And then everybody has to pay their own meal. You know, it's not about me finding sponsors to pay you your meal, because then you get into dependencies, and this is not good. You know, this is counterproductive if we want to build up trust. So dependency of sponsorship, you know, we have always rejected this. And, you know, we had some grassroots negotiations when we set up the rules for localization in this initial days. They haven't changed, you know, no pitch, no pitching. So you get there, but don't be a salesman, you know, because it will be counter effective. It will, you know, it will backfire. If you go into a Log Lunch and say, hey, by the way, you know, I'm the best and I have this service and don't you want to, you know, people don't like this.
That's true. And that's not what happens. Log Lunches, from my experience, right? That's not what happens. So we don't, we talk business without talking business, right? We talk shop without talking shop.
And this is super important. And fortunately, you know, the community embraced it. And now you go wherever. And you won't find anybody, you know, like misbehaving in that sense. And that creates this magic of just spending some time, good relaxed time, learning, sharing. You know, it's a trust one-to-one area. And we don't have speeches either. You know, there's nobody on the stage because stage, it's like
separates
a conference.
You.
You know, one to many. I'm an expert and you are not. You sit in the audience of the conference. You are not an expert. You see? So who decides that this guy is an expert? Well, nobody. This is just because he had a good copywriter, he had a good pitch, or he wants to be promoted or whatever, you know? So in Log Lunch, everybody is on the same side. So it doesn't matter if you are a CEO of a multi-million dollar LSP or end client, you know, you have a budget of millions to spend. It doesn't matter if you are a professional translator or just a young, you know, just released from university, starting your job. You know, everybody can learn from each other and there's no hierarchies. That is cool. I like it.
That's true. That is true. That is very, very nice. Everybody loves doing it. Everybody loves being a part of it. And it has been creating all sorts of opportunities in the more personal sense, I have to say, more than anything else, which is really probably what we were missing in the industry anyway. So talking about connections and all of that, because I cannot keep you here forever, but I have to talk about this new alter ego that was born recently that turned you into a famous YouTuber. So what's the story behind that? So already super big and connected to everyone with Log Lunch, and now a new personality or a new persona is born. So who is this new character in your life?
Okay, yeah. So exactly. YouTube came into my life in summer, this summer. It's a completely new area for me. I haven't been, you know, neither doing any YouTubing before, not doing this. So how did it came up with that? You know, ChatGPT came in our lives in 2023, and that affected business in a very massive way. So, and I think, you know, from my point of view, there was a tipping point in 2023. that it's a major shift in our industry. So before, the translator was at the heart of the whole process with more or less credits paid to, but
yes,
they were at the heart of the process. Now, with generation of text and context awareness, machine translations got just a huge step forward in understanding and getting it right from the scratch. And reality is that most of translation big budgets embrace this, you know, so, oh, ChatGPT, AI, you know, how can we make it useful? And 2023, 2024 were the years where the industry and our clients embraced this new thing.
Reality. The and new reality.
Changes, yeah, and it changes everything, right? So the translator is not in the majority of the content, is not in the center anymore. Text generation, you know, basically has the power to substitute translation industry. Don't get it wrong. You know, it's we use translation as a matter of getting to everybody at a low cost. Now, we all know that localization, to getting close to you as an end user, as a customer, the one thing that really sells is trust. And it's one-to-one personalized sales negotiation or convincing or whatever, you know. And now with generative AI, you can do it in multi-language and you can do it en masse. You know, marketing, forget about marketing. Well, who needs marketing on a global scale if you can communicate one-to-one with each of your buyers? So this is a tectonical shift from where we come before to where we come. Now, this is all a transition. And we all know organizations don't just, you know, embrace a new technology and tomorrow it's all off. So that's why we are all in jobs still, right? And but the technology part is super important. And us as a language service provider, we considered, you know, can we be a leader in post editing? You know, can we be you know, what is it? Is it cost? Is it speed? Is it, do we want to do that? You know, and so we decided our from our background, a good thing is consultancy. So we know about technology, we know about the organizations, we know about all this stuff. So let's look into the consulting part and how people can embrace technology to make this happen, because we don't want to be, you know, against the technology change. We are too small to say this is not the right thing. So let's go with it. And, you know, and the YouTube channel was a result of half a year of consulting and training. We started our training program, but we noticed also that most of the people really don't know the technology out there. So, you know, everybody knows Intento. Everybody knows the brand name of BureauWorks or Crowdin, or, but who has experience with that? Who understands what the AI revolution looks like apart from marketing, you know, demos and so on? So this is what I cover in my YouTube channel. So my aim is to open the door to technology innovation so that everybody can, you know, look with their own eyes at their YouTube, you know, mobile phone, and just follow every month, every week, what's out there, what's new there. And then, like, little by little, create their own, you know, decision pool of where is my focus? Where do I want to go? Where is my place in this new world?
So why the need for the alter ego? Because I remember you doing some sort of a poll or something like that on LinkedIn, because you were looking for, you know, somehow a new name, like a new persona name. So why did you think of that?
Obi-Wan. Okay, so, you know, Obi-Wan is Star Wars, right?
Apparently. And then I realized that, but I'm not a connoisseur, I have to say.
Exactly. So we are talking about future technology, all the sci-fi stuff is becoming reality now nowadays. So one of the most, books that most influence me and what I see when I look at Elon Musk and all these guys is The Hitchhiker's Guide to Galaxy. It's Douglas Adams. Have you read it? Do you know?
No.
No? Okay. So this is like four books about an English British guy who travels the universe, right?
Okay.
And the whole story, and there's of course communication in the universe is a problem. How do you communicate with aliens?
I
And
wonder.
yeah, now this is a barrier. That is where Elon Musk and the large language model guys think about the bubblefish and think, how can we make it easy to communicate with other species? And species, not human species, so it can be animals. All the whale communication is now little by little dissevered. So how can we talk to our dog? And how can we have a reasonable conversation with the animals around us? And tomorrow, it's not an animal; it's an alien species. Eventually, so this is going through technology.
Okay, so this
And
is Jan in the future, moving to the future in the present. So taking on the
bringing
new
the
persona.
future to now, exactly. This is and it's a fun character. I think Obi-Wan is the lightsabers and all this stuff. Love it.
Okay, so my son is probably going to get into one of these things too. He's now in the dinosaur phase because you have to start somewhere. I'm sure you'll eventually be interested in all this stuff. Then I'll have a lot to learn. So thank you for the tips.
Well, I mean, technology will be more and more important, and communication, what we do, so large language models, TMS, we're talking about TMS, we are talking about the AI features they are releasing so that you know what you can use there. This is sometimes futuristic, but the speed is incredible, and maybe 2025, this is my prediction for this year, is the game changer where people understand that either they keep on learning. This is also why we have embraced the training courses at Beluga. So we train people on crowd and on bureau works in short 2, 3 days, 4 days courses, because there's no time for longer stuff. And what you have learned half a year ago might be outdated in a couple of months.
Oh yeah, for sure. Even the systems themselves keep on reinventing themselves. I mean, of course, I've heard all of those people talking, and I've seen presentations from everyone. And of course, I have to be on top of things for many reasons. And it's very, very interesting to see how fast things are going, and also that a lot of the people who resisted for a long time are now truly worried about their future and how they're going to, see themselves in the present and in the future. So thank you so much, Jan. This has been amazing, a long time coming. So we had to do it, right? There was no way around.
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
And this is just the
it was
first of many.
overdue. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I'll see you around. Thank you so much for, making all of this possible for a lot of us, and to just continue to be present in an industry because we all need to be present and participate. And I guess you're doing your bit, right? So thank you so
I
much
try
for
to.
being here, and we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rita. Thanks a lot.